I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we're back from vacation. So what the hell? I thought we'd start the show today with a few stories that give us hope about the future of Washington State. Also, we've learned a local school teacher is on leave following our reporting about his nighttime persona. And the Seattle Times picks a very odd moment from the presidential debate to fact check. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Thank you for letting Nicole and I go on vacation. And Daryl was also on, not a vacation. Daryl got married over the weekend. So we're asking right now if we can share a picture or something. So it's just great. I was in Vegas. Nicole was in Arizona. Daryl was over on the East Coast getting married. I don't know what Miranda's doing. I should check in. But we appreciate you guys generously allowing us a few days off. We needed it. Oh, my God. We needed it. And I thought we'd actually start the show today because I don't know if it's because we left. And then you're like, guys, we've got to make sure they come back from the same places where they went. And so we need there to be sane news stories so they feel like there's something worth saving in Washington. So they come back. And so there were a few stories over the weekend while we were gone, since last Tuesday, that I thought, oh my gosh, I'm shocked by this. This is great news. So I thought, since we're just, a few days off, let's come back. Let's talk about some positive stuff. So the last time we saw you guys was for our live debate night coverage. Was that last Tuesday? Holy smokes, it's been forever since last Tuesday. And so we did an hour of live debate coverage, talked about it a little bit on the Sunday show. I just had to revisit, though, because I've watched it 100 times and I just love it. I was very critical. I apologized in our debate night coverage, but I feel like I need to apologize on our live show. An apology, kind of. I said, Bob Ferguson's doing this debate and he canceled the other one with the coalition because it's hosted by King 5 and Seattle Times, two outlets that are most deferential to him, that are least likely to fact check him or to ask him hard questions. I give them credit. I thought the moderators, especially Jim Bruner from the Times and Joyce Taylor from King 5 News, did a good job. I thought they asked fair questions. And I particularly enjoyed the moment where Joyce Taylor, who's like a legend in Seattle news, and again, keep in mind the audience for King 5, it definitely skews left, where Joyce Taylor called Bob Ferguson out for lying about Dave Reichert's record on abortion. Glorious.
I will support and protect the abortion laws that currently exist in Washington State. This is a question that's been asked and answered since 1970.
You went back to Congress and you voted 3 times for a nationwide abortion ban that criminalizes doctors. Look, you do not support a woman's right to choose.
I want to follow up on something that you said, Mr. Ferguson, and then I will let you rebut Mr. Reichert. In your political ad, you did characterize your opponent's votes in Congress as a straight-out ban, not mentioning that there would have been exceptions after 20 weeks, such as saving the life of the mother or in cases of rape or incest. That was not in your ad. Was that ad misleading? Did it lack context?
Certainly not misleading. In fact, a Spokane TV station reviewed it and said no such thing. It's a 30-second ad, so I'll let Dave try to defend his vote.
Again, Mr. Ferguson is not being honest with the people here in Washington State. Those 3 votes were based upon viability, legal terminology, viability at 20 weeks. So I actually voted 3 times for abortions, access to abortions at viability. It's almost the same law that exists here in Washington State, which is 24 weeks. So if Bob is saying that I voted to ban abortions at viability, Bob believes that Washington State's law then is not, is a ban. If he doesn't believe in Washington State laws, then he also believes in a ban.
Oh, that's good, Joyce. So please accept my apology. I mean, I still think King 5 is hopelessly biased toward Democrats, but I appreciated Joyce Taylor of all people because, again, she's sort of a stalwart media figure in Seattle, particularly among the left, which King 5's viewership skews. So that audience, it was particularly important for them to hear from Joyce, ask Bob, you know, about his misleading ad on abortion, and Bob just crumbled. So anyway, I had to a little glimpse of sanity from King 5, although Weiss Castle just got in the comments and said that King 5 also posted a story while we were gone that said repealing the Climate Commitment Act would be bad for our health. I'll have to look into that. So I guess they're evening out on the sanity train. There will be another debate in the race for governor coming up this Wednesday in Spokane. It's being hosted by the Association of Washington Business. And that'll be, I think, a good opportunity. Dave was a little nervous, you could tell, during that first debate. So hopefully he shook that off a little bit. Bob was not as strong of a debater as I thought he would be. He was also really easily, like, triggered. Very easily triggered. And he lost the abortion line of attack. He lost the Donald Trump line of attack. So we'll have to see how Wednesday's debate goes. All right. Story number two that gives us a little hope for Washington State, makes us not so desperately depressed. So we discussed on the show last week that there has been this civil case going on in the death of Summer Taylor. So Summer Taylor was a protester in the summer of 2020, and she was with the group that took over I-5. The Washington State Patrol just opted, we're going to shut I-5 down in both directions, except there was a driver who tried to get around that closure, went the wrong way onto a ramp, ended up hitting two people, one of them fatally, and that was Summer Taylor, who was just 24 years old at the time. So I mentioned how insane it was last week. We listened to some of the arguments from Summer, the attorney for Summer Taylor's estate, who said, we want $24 million from the state of Washington because that's how old she was. So just this arbitrary figure. But the actual honest-to-God argument from the attorney for Summer Taylor's estate was the state patrol should have done their jobs and removed the protesters from the interstate and arrested them because then Summer Taylor would still be alive. So their honest-to-God argument was, well, the Washington State Patrol had a duty to protect Summer Taylor from her own criminal conduct, which is just insane. So I'm happy to report that a jury in that civil case rejected the case brought about by Summer Taylor's estate, which, thank God for sanity on that. That would have set this insane precedent for protests continuing forward where any protester was hurt or killed and police would have been blamed for it. Like, utterly insane. So anyway, that happened. Now, the jury, there's a couple nuances here. So the jury found that the Washington State Patrol was not liable in Summer Taylor's death, but they also found that Summer Taylor was not liable in her own death, which I just think is insane. So they said that the driver of the car that went the wrong way to get around the closure was the only one liable, which, yeah, he has some liability there. I mean, he went around a road closure, got the wrong way on an interstate, and hit a group of people. Even though the group of people were there illegally, he still has some responsibility. He's in jail, right? He's in prison right now for it. But the idea that Summer Taylor bears no responsibility for doing something illegal, illegally taking over a freeway, and not just something illegal, something stupid. It's dangerous to go on a freeway, to walk on a freeway, and to expect, well, they're gonna close it down, it's fine, and we can just be out here protesting against police violence. But this attorney, again, her name is Karen Kohler, who represents Summer Taylor's family. This lady is really something else. So she, you know, even though the estate didn't win this big payday that they wanted, she argued that it's still, so we have the sane part, like sane, yay jury, sane, mostly. But then the attorney's arguing essentially that the verdict is still a victory because Summer Taylor wasn't found liable. And so it sends like a larger message. Here's a clip from Como News.
That was a legacy verdict. That is a reminder to everybody that protested that you did so with honor on the right side of the law, even if it was against how the law normally is.
What? You were on the right side of the law, even though you were on the wrong side of the law and ended up paying for that with your life. What a stupid thing to say, and what an irresponsible thing to say. So again, sane verdict, very happy for it. Insane to even think that you could win a case where you're accusing the police of not protecting someone from their own criminal misconduct. But think about the message that that attorney is sending. Like, go ahead and do dangerous things where you're putting your life on the line and break the law. And now we have this legacy verdict for Summer Taylor, who died at the age of 24, that shows that even if you break the law, you're on the right side of things. Even if you're doing something desperately dangerous, you're on the right side of things. It's really insane. And you know, I don't know how this changes things for the state patrol. You know, we've seen, so basically this was a weird circumstance. We already know that police have been completely handcuffed from doing anything with demonstrators. I mean, that's pretty clear. When they took over I-5 to support Hamas, it took like 6 hours to get them off the freeway and to, you know, convince them through, you know, negotiations. Like, let's get these people off the freeway, even if it takes 6 hours. So what happened during this is, yeah, sometimes when protesters go on the freeway, they are arrested. But this was during COVID, so it was 2020, and the King County Jail wasn't booking anyone, really, unless it was a serious violent offense. So they would have arrested these people. King County Jail wouldn't have taken them. So it's like, kind of, what the point? What's the point? So they decided, let's just close off the freeway, which is ridiculous, too, because then you're just hurting the traveling public. But I don't know if the Washington State Patrol will change anything, but I don't think they did anything wrong. It is not there. It's not even reasonable. They're down hundreds of troopers. It's not even reasonable to assume that if anybody gets the whim to block a protest in the name of whatever they want to protest over, that immediately the Washington State Patrol has to be able to close down the entire interstate, close the on-ramps, close the off-ramps in case anybody wants to. It's just stupid. So a sane verdict from the jury. But shame on that attorney for almost suggesting that protesters should continue to engage in this kind of activity. There are plenty of ways to protest in this wonderful country of ours where you're not putting your own life in danger, where you're not putting other people's lives in danger, where you're not breaking other laws, and when you're not acting irresponsibly. So do one of those things, one of those many, many ways without hurting other people or getting yourself killed. All right, let's see. Story number three that gives me a little hope for Washington State that we're going to start the show with today, just on a positive note. So we talked on the show last week. This is a great update. There's a teacher for Peninsula High School who, Kelsey Wayne is their name. I don't know. I'm just going to be honest. I don't know the gender. The LinkedIn profile said he, they, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to say he. Okay. Kelsey Wayne, high school teacher, English teacher at Peninsula High School in the Peninsula School District. We ended up getting some concerned parent emails about this teacher last week, saying that their behavior can't be ignored. There needs to be pressure from all angles. District has to make the right decision from students, because it turned out they found out that Kelsey Wayne, the teacher, was moonlighting as a drag king named Jack King Goff. Okay, Jack King Goff. So you already have this like sexually vulgar drag king name. And then on their public facing social media post, he referred to himself as the orgasmic drag king, which these were all students had seen these pages, parents had seen these pages. So it wasn't like, and as I said on the show last week, honestly, I kind of don't care if you're a teacher and you want to go do drag at night. Don't do it. Don't make it public so your students can see it. And certainly keep in mind the influence you're having on kids, and maybe don't call yourself Jack King Goff, the orgasmic drag king. So there's this whole other element here that's disturbing. I mean, again, I had a lot of you disagree with me, like, no, we don't want teachers to be drag queens or kings, but like, I'm sorry, I've been to some pretty PG-13 drag shows, and if that's what you're doing on your free time, as long as it's not interfering with your ability to be a role model and a teacher, then I don't care. But then it got even creepier, because in one of the social media posts that again was public facing, Jack King Goff wrote, "Lock up your daughters, Jack Goff is here," which is predatory behavior. Think about that. If you had a straight cis white man teacher,
right,
who was saying on social media, lock up your daughters, like the police would be at their door. But because it's a drag king, we're supposed to be like, oh, that's totally normal to have that kind of predatory comment when you teach high school boys and girls. So that was the element of this that was really troublesome to me. That, yeah, one thing to be a drag king on your spare time, another thing to put up sexually vulgar posts and posts that are very predatory in nature. So we ranted and raved about this last week, wondering what the school district would do. And I am happy to report that the Peninsula School District apparently has an ounce of common sense and sanity. Sent out, the principal of the high school sent out this email that we obtained over the weekend, saying that he wanted to update everyone, sent out to teachers. This is what was sent out to families in, they call him K. in Kay's ELA classes this afternoon. It said, "Hello, Seahawk families. We've been getting some questions this week regarding Kay Wayne, your child's ELA teacher, and wanted to share some information with you. Kay is currently on leave, and we have been working this week to secure a quality sub in their absence. Blah, 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 blah. Thank you, and reach out if you have any questions." And that is from Matt Benoit, principal of the Peninsula High School. So this teacher is on leave. We are working and we've reached out to the school district. You know, was this a forced leave? Is this disciplinary action? Did the teacher opt to go on leave on their own? It sounds to us like, based on what we're hearing from parents, that this was an action the school district took, but we're working to get more information. But this is all we want. I'm under no illusion that an entire school district can police the activity, both in class and out of class, of every single teacher. I don't think that's fair. I don't think it's reasonable. But what we do expect is for public schools to take action when you have a teacher that does something that's clearly not okay. So that's really, this is perfect. This is sane. This is the outcome that we hope for, that Peninsula High School and the Peninsula School District said, yeah, you can't say lock up your daughters. You can't call yourself the orgasmic drag king on public-facing social media profiles that our high school students would see. So for the record, if you ever think I'm blaming a school district for some rogue teacher, by and large, it depends on their reaction. It depends on how swift they're willing to take action. For instance, the Olympia School District. You know, we've done all sorts of stories about insane teacher behavior in the Olympia School District, and it never seems like there's any consequences because the Olympia School Board is incredibly woke. I think it's the wokest school district in the nation, and they message like this all the time, like, oh, we're okay, basically, with teachers who want to bring their political and social agendas in the classroom. So it's another thing when you have the Olympia School District where there's some crazy teacher that goes on a political rant or a social rant or whatever it is, and nothing happens to them, seemingly, and they're back in the classroom doing their thing. That's a totally different issue. We're going to have school districts across this state where there's going to be teachers who do something they're not supposed to do. How that school district reacts is everything. So I give a lot of credit for the Peninsula School District for taking the concerns of parents seriously. And Kelsey Wayne has no place in a classroom when he's conducting himself that way, on social media and after hours. Absolutely unbelievable. But another win for sanity. Yay. Woohoo. Okay, coming up next, I want to play a clip from our Sundays with Subscribers show because, you know, we're seeing increasingly so Spokane go the path of Seattle. Obviously, that's a big mistake. Seattle has gone through a lot of things that other cities can learn from. And Spokane, for whatever reason, just wants to double down on the bad decisions of Seattle. And I'm very worried about our friends in Spokane. So we'll discuss that coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home at some point this year, check out a few real estate agents. But don't choose one until you've talked to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. I'm telling you, the service that Wes Jones and his team offer is second to none. You know, from being able to advance money if you need to make some cosmetic repairs to your homes. And their staging is absolutely superb. Sharona Rhodes and her husband went to sell their home, and they took advantage of Wes Jones and his team's staging.
So now it's, okay, the house is empty, and you're seeing all the things that you've never really noticed. Like, oh my goodness, there's a broken baseboard over there. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, that looks terrible. You know, and he's like, calm down. Staging will take care of it. Just don't worry about it. They came in and they staged everything. And my 17-year-old daughter just graduated high school. So we went in to look at the house after the stage. And she said, Mom, I would buy this house. You've always hated our house. She said, this house is aesthetic. I love this house. Like, okay, 17-year-old child.
Yeah, staging really matters. And when you look at all of Wes Jones's listings, they all shine. And that's so critical to making sure you get eyeballs on your listing, you get people in the door for viewings, et cetera. So check out sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Spokane is going the way of Seattle, but there's still time to save it if the city is willing to heed the warnings that are being given to it. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So on the show last week, we talked about this announcement that was made by a celebrity chef who's from Spokane, went out, did his thing, came back, opened up Zona Blanca Ceviche Bar in Spokane, his hometown, was super proud of it. The community was excited about it. Well, he announced last week that he's going to have to close that restaurant down because of what's happening outside its doors, because of the crime crisis, because of the drug crisis and how it's impacting his business. And he pled with city leaders in Spokane to recognize what he called the urgency of what's happening in our downtown. He said, if someone like me, who has been fortunate enough to gain national acclaim and enjoy immense support from this community, is struggling this hard to keep my doors open, I can't begin to imagine what it's like for those who don't have the same privileges. He wrote on Facebook, the challenges we face are real and growing. And if we don't take immediate action to address the safety and well-being of our downtown, many more businesses, especially the smaller ones, will face even greater struggles in the months ahead. He said, now is the time for us to come together and protect what makes Spokane so special. And, you know, we did this story. We talked about, you know, Chad White putting this post up about one council member coming out and saying, we're sorry. We're sorry this is happening. We need to do better. Was ignored by the mayor, was ignored by the rest of the council members. Well, Nicole got a hold of Chef Chad White, and we featured an interview with him on yesterday's episode of Sundays with Subscribers, where he talked about really what he was dealing with as a business owner that led him to make that decision.
We've been broken into about 20 times over the last 8 years. Again, I'll admit I wasn't doing my part in calling in every single time that something went wrong, right? Every single time I got to get on the phone, it's another 10, 15 minutes. Sometimes we don't have that time, especially when we're dealing with our customers and trying to give them the service that they need. Often we just shoo the person away and move on. But now we've got pieces of foil flying into our dining room, into our patio. My son crawls around the restaurant until we open the doors. It's just not a very safe place. And we've watched our sales slowly decline. And not at such a rapid pace where I was like, oh, wow, this is a really big problem. I need to address this immediately. It was, okay, I'll keep forking over. You know, I'll take a draw from my 401k. I'll borrow money from my wife. You know, hey, I'll get you back, you know, so on and so forth. And it's just slowly gotten worse and worse and worse. I believe wholeheartedly, and I grew up with this notion, accountability is love. Our friends and our family, if they're truly our friends and our family, we don't sit idle while they destroy their lives. We hold them accountable to it. So if people are breaking the law and we hold them accountable, what's the worst that could happen?
Amen.
I think the worst that could happen is right now turning a deaf ear, not addressing the situation.
Man, 100%. Accountability is love. And that's the point. You know, I think a lot of businesses in Seattle tried to raise red flags about what was happening here. And these are progressive business owners, you know, liberal business owners in Seattle who, you know, they weren't taking extremist positions. They were basically saying that, look, accountability is love. Accountability is compassion. And they were completely ignored in Seattle. And Seattle for 10 years continued down this path where it was like, look the other way, let people, you know, die with needles in their arm in the alcoves of these businesses. You know, 3rd Avenue, 4th Avenue are basically ghost towns in Seattle, what used to be the vibrant heart of a once wonderful city. And so now I hear this chef, Chad White, totally reasonable guy. You should watch our full interview on Sundays with Subscribers. Totally reasonable guy just saying, what needs to be said? Like, look, what's the worst that could happen if we hold them accountable? What's the worst that could happen if we say either you get help or we're gonna have to arrest you? What's the worst that could happen? You could save their life. They don't die. They don't end up in jail. They don't end up in prison. They don't hurt other people. They don't steal from other businesses. They don't force other restaurants to close down. Really, what's the worst that could happen? And so here you have this guy clearly empathetic, and I think that really was obvious with him. This is someone who loves Spokane, who is filled with empathy and now filled with sadness over what's happening in the city of Spokane. And leaders there have a decision to make. Do they look the other way? Do they ignore people like Chad White, similar to how Seattle ignored business owners and restaurant owners here 5-10 years ago? Or do they say, we're not going down the path of Seattle? We can be progressive if that's what we choose to be. We can be caring and all of these things, but we're not going to let people ruin our city. We're not going to be progressive at the expense of restaurant owners, of business owners who are contributing to our society. We're not going to do that. And that's a choice that only city leaders in Spokane can make and the voters of Spokane can make. You know, one of the things that really saddened me from this conversation with Chef White is the amount of blowback he's gotten for coming out and saying, I'm closing down my restaurant because crime and drug abuse outside has gotten so bad that pieces of tinfoil are flying in the door when we open it. And same thing that happens here. This far left, angry mob gangs up on him on Reddit and all these things. Oh, I bet he's just a bad business owner, can't run a business, so he's just blaming drug users. Come on, it's absurd. So that all signs are that Spokane is ready, willing, and dead set on going down the path of Seattle. I pray to God that someone there speaks up and says, we can't do that. We have to listen to people like Chad White. So if you want to watch that full interview, you can watch it by becoming an Undivided subscriber, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter so you can be alerted to opportunities to get involved. And like we always say, turn your frustration into action. All right. So last week, there was two debates, of course. There was the gubernatorial debate, and there was also the presidential debate. The Seattle Times chose a very odd part of the presidential debate to spend time fact-checking. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so during the presidential debate, Seattle came up, not the first time that former President Donald Trump has talked about our summer of love. Here is the moment.
They're coming in from all over the world, David, all over the world. And crime rates are down all over the world because of it.
But let me just
ask you. David, when are those people going to be prosecuted? When are the people that burned down Minneapolis going to be prosecuted? Or in Seattle, they went into Seattle, they took over a big percentage of the city of Seattle. When are those people going to be prosecuted?
But let me just ask you.
You might ask her that question.
Yeah, I mean, and we've been saying that for a long time. Like, January 6th was bad. I don't feel bad for people who injured police officers on January 6th and are in a federal prison. But, you know, you had Democrats cheering on left-wing political violence for an entire summer. Like, even showing up in Seattle, council members showing up at a takeover of a police precinct and egging it on, encouraging it. And how many people were really arrested during all of that? A couple of the people who lit police cars on fire. They still haven't found the people who murdered, you know, committed one of them, who shot into a car with juveniles up at Chaz Chop. So it's a valid point. In the media, they're always like, well, that's whataboutism. No, it's not. It's a genuine question about, okay, you're losing your minds about January 6th. Fine. Again, fine. But it rings so hollow when you ignore left-wing violence. So the Seattle Times, rather than saying, you know, former President Donald Trump brings up CHOP in response to questions about January 6th. Maybe we should look into, you know, why weren't more people arrested? Why weren't elected leaders more serious about left-wing violence? Maybe we should look into the moral hypocrisy. No, they fact-check his claim that it was a pretty big chunk of Seattle. What was his exact wording? Can you play that one more time?
Large percentage.
Large percentage. So Seattle Times puts out a fact-check. Trump falsely claims CHOP protesters took over a big part of Seattle. And in this wonderful fact check, awesome use of their journalistic platform, they literally put up a map with like a little line around the actual portion of Seattle that protesters took over. And it said the zone's size fluctuated, but it essentially occupied about 6 city blocks surrounding the Seattle Police Department's East Precinct building in Cal Anderson Park, extending east to 12th Avenue, west to Broadway, south to East Pine Street, and north to East Denny Way. Okay. Do you guys understand how dumb that is? Like, look, I get it. If you're talking about the entirety of the city, is it technically factually accurate for Trump to say big percentage? No. But what you're quibbling about is how the size of the zone that left-wing rioters took over. And so that's what the Seattle Times wants to be very specific. Let's be very specific. It was not a big percentage. It was just a measly 6 square blocks that armed left-wing rioters took over that city officials said nothing about, that virtually no one faced charges for. In fact, the city of Seattle settled a lawsuit to give some of the protesters who took over that zone money. Like, let's not focus on how bad it actually was and the point that Donald Trump was making. Let's quibble over is it a big part of Seattle or not? You realize how dumb that is, right? So anyway, it was funny for a short period of time. This was all over. Elon Musk was tweeting about this because the Seattle Times got community noted on X, which is where readers point out context that's lacking or something that disproves a claim. And the Seattle Times was community noted using their own reporting. The community note said the Seattle Times themselves have reported on the very real incident in June of 2020 where violent protesters forcefully took control of a portion of Seattle's Capitol Hill area that was dubbed CHAZ or CHOP, the Capitol Hill Organized Protest. Now, that community note has since been removed, and the way community notes works is there's some ex-users who have the authority to basically rate and rank community notes. They might have decided, I don't know who did, that it wasn't necessary. And again, I go back to, do I think it needed a community note? Probably not. I think it's funny. Technically, the Seattle Times fact check is accurate. It provides context. Like, no, it wasn't a big percentage of Seattle that was taken over. But it is so petty, biased, and ridiculous that they want to do an entire fact check quibbling over size, over the former president's characterization of the size of CHOP CHAZ, and completely ignore the very valid, very serious point he's making about the moral hypocrisy in this country around political violence depending on the side of the aisle that perpetrates it. And it just continues, it continues to prove his point that we're 3 years past January 6th and Democrats are still obsessed with it. But they've never been asked to answer. They've never been forced to answer or apologize for their support of left-wing violence, not to mention the left-wing protests, riots, unrest that continue on a fairly regular basis in this country. You know, left-wing, pro-Hamas, anti-Israel people taking over freeways, major bridges, blocking access to major airports like SeaTac. And all of that just sort of gets the meh treatment from the media. Like, they might mention it here and there, but can you imagine if it was Trump supporters? Just wrap your mind around that. If it were Trump supporters who blocked access to a major airport or who blocked a freeway or the Golden Gate Bridge for hours on end, and you know damn well how different not only the media coverage would be, but how different the police response would be because it's dictated by politicians. So you know damn well, we said this during the little occupation at the University of Washington. Jay Inslee had jack shit to say about it. It's his alma mater, same with Bob Ferguson, his alma mater. And they didn't have anything to say about it until, you know, later on when it was resolved. And you really think that they wouldn't have had a joint press conference if it were MAGA extremists who were occupying the quad at the University of Washington? Like, of course, there's no moral consistency anymore. No moral consistency. That's what Donald Trump was pointing out. And instead of understand that he had a point, the Seattle Times said, oh, let's use semantics. Let's do a fact check based on semantics. It's absolutely unbelievable. All right. Speaking of Donald Trump, a second assassination attempt, we're going to talk about that coming up next. And also Bob Ferguson's reaction to it, which is just precious. First, precious. I don't know if that's the word. Listen, I'm still back from vacation. I'm searching for words. I ate my weight in chicken strips at the pool like every day.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. Good for me. Right. Not doing an Eastside Weight Loss Clinic spot today.
This is the purpose.
But this is the purpose. Right. Thank you. I had a lot of chicken strips. I don't regret a single chicken strip. And I dipped them in a combination of ranch and honey mustard. And then sometimes it was three. It was ranch, it was honey mustard, and it was barbecue sauce.
Nummy.
Delicious. Anyway,
love it.
Why was I talking about that? Because I have my vacation brain. Anyway, if you have been hearing our spots about Natchez RV Resort and you thought, well, that looks nice. I would love to have, first of all, an RV in a sane place to go and park it in a sane community. Don't worry. You don't need an RV to enjoy the amazing lifestyle that is Natchez RV Resort, because you know what? They now have stunning turnkey park models that are ready to go. It is a perfect way to make Natchez RV Resort your home away from home. They also, in addition to having that benefit that you can take advantage of if you don't have an RV, they also just opened their beautiful, luxurious 4,300 square foot clubhouse. I mean, you are not going to find something like this at another RV resort. If you have friends and family who are visiting, their clubhouse has all this gorgeous space, 4,300 square foot gourmet kitchen, indoor, outdoor fireplace. And of course, the resort itself is surrounded by all of these amenities. They've got pickleball courts, tennis courts. They've got a dog park. They've got a playground if you've got your kiddos. And then around there, there's just a million things to do, depending on what your pleasure is. Recreation, maybe you want to go wine tasting. There's so much to do around there. So check it out, NatchezRVResort.com. 300 days of sunshine, an awesome community there, including some undivided viewers and listeners who have now bought their lot out there. So make a reservation now to come out and check out their stunning park models or one of their lots that are available. NatchezRVResort.com, NatchezRVResort.com. Okay. Another attempt on former President Donald Trump's life, according to the FBI, calling this an attempted assassination. And this is just, I mean, how do I put this without sounding like a conspiracy theorist? Do I care if I sound like a conspiracy theorist? Eh, not really. So Vivek Ramaswamy has been saying for a while that they're not going to let Donald Trump be president. He's been saying that for a long time. They're not going to let it. And who's they? And people are asking me that. Who's they? Because I posted on Twitter yesterday. I kind of agree with Vivek. Like, they are not going to let him be president. And people are like, who's they? The Illuminati, of course. No, the powers that be. I mean, you know, the people who control the purse strings of war and all that stuff, who don't want former President Donald Trump in office again. So I'm worried about it. I look, if voters vote and they choose Kamala Harris, fine. Like, that's democracy. That is what it is. I'm worried about Donald Trump living to November. That's what I'm worried about at this point, genuinely. So this happened outside his golf course. This from the New York Post. Alleged would-be Trump assassin, Ryan Routh, 58, of Hawaii, echoed Harris and Biden's anti-Trump rhetoric as he backed Dem candidates. So they're looking into this guy, and he just spews lines on social media that are very consistent with what, you know, Kamala Harris, Joe Biden have been saying about Donald Trump being an existential threat to democracy, and for that matter, Democrats in Washington state, the same lines that they spew about Donald Trump and how bad he is for the country and women and all these things. Again, according to the New York Post, the alleged gunman, who authorities said targeted former President Donald Trump while he golfed in Florida on Sunday afternoon, previously declared on social media that democracy is on the ballot this year and we cannot lose, echoing the anti-Trump rhetoric used by Vice President Kamala Harris and President Biden. Law enforcement sources identified him as Ryan Wesley Routh. His social media account was also filled with nonsensical tweets and replies, while also voicing strong support for Ukraine in its war against Russia and Taiwan in its struggle against China. One reply to ex-owner Elon Musk seemed to suggest purchasing a rocket from the billionaire. He said, he told Elon, I would like to buy a rocket from you. I wish to load it with a warhead for Putin's Black Sea mansion bunker to end him. Can you give me a price, please? It can be old and used as it's not returning. So clearly he's unwell, right? I think anyone who attempts to assassinate a president or a former president or a leader of any kind is mentally unwell. So I've never been, how do I put this? I've never been a particular fan of, like, cause and effect, of saying because Joe Biden called Donald Trump a threat to democracy, someone tried to kill Donald Trump. Because Kamala Harris said, we're not going back, we can't lose, someone picked up a gun and tried to shoot Donald Trump while he was golfing. I'm not a big fan of that because I think people are responsible for their own actions. You are within your right to criticize a politician, a political opponent, whatever it is. And sometimes mentally ill people are going to take your words and they're going to spin it. That being said, I do think that people in power have a responsibility to understand how their words might be taken. And when you are consistently pushing the drumbeat of our country and everything it stands for is in peril if this man wins, you have to understand how dangerous that rhetoric is. So do I believe they're directly responsible? I can't say for sure. I can't say if this individual said, he was arrested, so, you know, maybe they can ask him, and I'm sure that they will. But it's hard. I know people immediately want to jump and say it's Kamala Harris's fault, it's Joe Biden's fault, and I'm not willing to do that. I am willing to say, though, that there continues to be very troublesome rhetoric about former President Donald Trump that's not true, that's completely unhinged, and it's being pushed up and down the Democratic Party consistently on a daily basis. The Trump Vance ticket put out a press release just a short time ago, just a couple minutes ago, right? The headline of it, Democrats' rhetoric inspired another attempt on President Trump's life. And so they go in there and they list all of these comments and what they're calling violent rhetoric from members of Congress, from Kamala Harris, from Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Tim Walz. And they actually listed out, I'm not even going to read all these, but there is like Hakeem Jeffries, we must stop Trump. People saying that the, previous attempt on him wasn't even that serious. The Cincinnati Inquirer, the former president, Donald Trump, brings a lot of this stuff on himself. NBC News called it a golf course incident. So the downplaying in the media of things like this, of attempted assassinations on a former president of the United States who is his party's nominee to be the next president of the United States. And this long list of statements where when you read them in their totality, you have to understand the point that he's making. Again, I'm not willing to draw a direct line, and I think that there has been horrible things that Republicans have said about Democratic candidates as well. But these things speak to, again, there's a consistency from the top to the bottom. And you are convincing Americans, mostly who are, aligned with you politically and then have the added, layer of being mentally unstable, that like our country as we know it will come to an end if this man's elected president. And I can totally see how when it hits the ears of someone who's unstable, that they might pick up a gun and try to do something about it. Well, I can be the hero. I can make sure that our country still exists, that our country isn't ruined. So it's incredibly irresponsible. And then, you look at what I would consider, what I would consider like fake sympathy. So you have these politicians who consistently are this drumbeat of threat to democracy, threat to our way of life, or threat to reproductive rights, all these things. And then someone tries to shoot the guy and you're like, oh, no. Oh, that's terrible. Wink, wink. And that's Bob Ferguson. He takes to social media. Someone who is obsessed with Donald Trump, unhinged about Donald Trump, says, relieved President Trump is safe. This violence must end. It doesn't even ring sincere. Not in the slightest, especially considering he has repeated these exact same lines that Harris and Biden, among many others, have used. One of his previous tweets, Donald Trump is an existential threat to our democracy, our American values, and reproductive freedom. I have experience taking him on and stopping his illegal, cruel, and un-American policies. So here you have Bob Ferguson, who wants to be our next governor, calling Donald Trump cruel, un-American, saying he's a threat to our democracy, he's a threat to our American values, he's a threat to reproductive freedom. And then someone tries to kill the guy and you say, oh, I'm relieved he's safe, this violence must end. Doesn't ring true at all. I'd also add, since we discussed it earlier in the show, that Bob Ferguson is just fine with political violence. He's just fine with political violence. He said nothing about Chaz Chopp when it was happening as the state's chief law enforcer. He said nothing about the violent riots and looting in downtown Seattle in the summer of 2020, where cop cars were lit on fire, even as the state's chief law enforcer. He said nothing until he was repeatedly pressured to do so about the acts of criminal civil unrest. And so this is not a guy who minds political violence when it's perpetrated by the left. And now he wants to say the violence must end. You don't ever say anything about political violence. You've said a lot about January 6th, an awful lot about January 6th. But when it's political violence carried out in the pursuit of a political agenda that you agree with, then you're absolutely silent. So forgive us if we don't believe you, Bob Ferguson, that you're relieved President Trump is safe. Something tells me that you're not. Although, if President Trump is assassinated, Bob Ferguson would lose one of his only lines of attack against Dave Reichert, because he couldn't accuse Dave Reichert of being a mega Trump Republican who's going to support Donald Trump and all his policies if President Trump is no longer with us. Of course, we don't want to see that outcome. But, you know, Bob Ferguson would be devastated by it, maybe, because then that line of attack goes away. But just insane stuff. Don't just, like, spare me the fake, spare me the fake concern. I would feel better if Bob Ferguson just didn't tweet anything out, because that would be more genuine. All right. Coming up next, we're going to get to our daily subscriber show poll and some questions, comments. Good show poll today that is really dividing our subscribers. I didn't anticipate that.
Oh, yeah. This topic is
very divisive.
Divisive.
Very divisive. Do you say divisive or divisive?
I would say divisive.
I say divisive, but then when I'm trying to be fancy, I say divisive.
Divisive.
Yeah. Maybe we could have a show poll on that. You just say divisive or divisive. All right. Bulwark Capital and our friend Zach Abraham, the chief investment officer at Bulwark Capital, they're having another one of their Know Your Risk webinars coming up on September 26th. So if you haven't attended one of these, it's totally virtual, totally free. Just go to knowyourriskradio.com to sign up. You will come away feeling much more empowered and informed about risks to your retirement portfolio. I think it's reasonable for a lot of people to feel anxious about their retirement portfolio right now, given current events, the state of the economy, et cetera. So one of the things on this webinar, you're going to hear some takes from Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital, but you also have an opportunity to ask them questions to know if your concerns and your anxieties about your retirement are valid. And also you'll learn about the how Bulwark uses their risk management strategy to say, you know, you've got whatever's happening globally and nationally. They're monitoring it every day. So they're going to adjust based on what's happening out there in the world, and they're going to make adjustments to your retirement portfolio to protect you against unnecessary risk. I mean, first of all, you know, risk is part of the equation, but what we're talking about here is managing risk and making sure you have someone who is actively managing the risk on your retirement portfolio. So join Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital for their latest Know Your Risk webinar happening again, September 26th. You can sign up right now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll, shall we? So I don't know if you guys saw it earlier today. Amazon CEO Andy Jassy came out and said, back to work, baby, that 5 days a week, Amazon employees are going to be expected to return to the office. And, you know, they have been slowly kind of moving back in that direction. I mean, cue the temper tantrums outside Amazon headquarters, because I'm sure there's going to be, you know, some protests from the Amazon employees who don't want to come back to the office. But he put out this long statement. We won't go through the whole thing, but he basically said that, you know, for the culture and the good of, you know, their business and the ability of people to work together to, you know, outcomes that they're looking for, that they need to come back to the office 5 days a week. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll today, Amazon announced employees will be required to return to the office 5 days a week. Do you think this is a good business decision? People are torn. Torn, I tell you. HTA says, it depends on the job. Most of my career was remote with travel to offices a couple days a week, and I was much more productive on my days away from the office. No needed politics, lunch talk, etc. Kim from The Claw. Hi, Kim from The Claw. Says, I've heard of lots of people working multiple jobs from home and earning two or three salaries because of the lack of monitoring by management. And this is the thing to me. And Andy Jassy even said, I mean, his announcement was a little more nuanced than you have to come back to the office 5 days a week. It was like there were some people who had elements of a remote job before the pandemic. What he basically said is we're returning to how things were pre-pandemic. And so there might be, on a case-by-case basis, you know, people who aren't going to be back in the office 5 days a week, You know, he even went in there and said, if you've got something going on with your family or a kid sick or whatever it is, like, this isn't like a 100% no exception situation. They're returning to how they were pre-pandemic because we're many years out of the pandemic right now, and there's no reason not to. But Kim from the Claw makes a good point. I know people who are working multiple jobs, and their individual employers don't know that, but they're at home, they're working multiple jobs because they don't have to physically be in an office. So for them, coming back to work might be problematic because they might not be able to do their other jobs from work. Philip Klum says, having worked for 35 years in an office and factory environment, I'm a proponent of being on site largely because there are things you can do in person you can't do remotely. Having personal contact with other people face to face enhances communication and creates contacts and networks more efficiently. Also, chance encounters happen more frequently and create new opportunities that just can't happen sitting behind a computer terminal at home. Some jobs are suited to work from home. Many are not. Great comment, Phil. Thank you. Sally said, I think a minimum of 3 days is good. Be a little flexible to retain good talent. And this is a risk for Amazon, right? Because you're talking about, for a lot of these tech workers, highly qualified individuals who often these tech companies are kind of bidding against each other to get, are trying to make sure they have the best perks, they have the best pay and all of this to get these highly qualified individuals. So I know now is not the best time for tech jobs, not the most competitive time for tech jobs. But at the same time, for Amazon, they are risking some of these people saying, no thanks, I'm going to take my talents to another tech company that is not going to make me work from the office 5 days a week. And Andy Jassy, I'm sure, knows that. I'm sure they're just deciding that, okay, if that's the decision you make, then maybe Amazon is not right for you. But again, cue the, what do you think? A couple more hours? Are there already protests outside Amazon?
I don't know.
The temper
tantrums
already beginning, but there will be. Don't cave to the mob, Andy Jassy. Just do what you think is best for your business. And clearly that's what he's doing. And if people want to work there, great. If not, they can take their talents somewhere else. And their talents are very, very marketable. So that's the decision that's being made. Oh, we said at the beginning of the show, our little Daryl Davis got married over the weekend to his beautiful now wife, Meg. I've had the privilege to know them for many years at the beginning of their courtship, if you will. And they're just a beautiful couple. Oh my gosh. And how beautiful does Meg look?
So beautiful.
So she's like, I'm not going to say where she works and stuff, but she works in fashion. And whenever I have like an outfit I think is kind of fashionable, I immediately look in the mirror and think, oh, Meg would like this. So I just knew she was going to look beautiful and elegant on their wedding day. So congratulations to Daryl and Meg. And Daryl looks so handsome.
And they were on the East Coast, just so everybody knows.
Yeah. I think they went to where was it? Not Martha's Vineyard, but some it was a super small wedding. They had 30 people there, just close family. And it just looked gorgeous. So just Daryl beautiful. And Meg, congratulations. Just lovely. I love love. I love it. I love weddings. They look so cute. I can't wait to see more pictures. All right, let's get to questions and comments. Old Sub Sailor with $10 Super Chat said, it's Sunday as well. The Democratic Party should change its name to the Socialist Communist Party of America. That's what they are now anyway. They aren't even trying to hide it these days. Julie Hafen, so many of our parks in Spokane have been overrun by drugs and homelessness, including Riverfront Park, that it's more and more difficult for parents to find a safe park to take their kids to without fear of them picking up drug paraphernalia or being exposed to users out of their mind. And that's exactly what we saw happen in Seattle. And it was considered right-wing NIMBY to say, hey, no homeless camps in the kids' playgrounds, okay? Like, hey, there's needles in the parks. Maybe that's not okay. And people were vilified. We were vilified for it. And it's like, okay, it's insane to think that we can't have legitimate boundaries for drug abuse and crime. Spool in 272 says, if he gets elected, I'm going naked to the governor squaring him. Wow, didn't expect that one.
I know.
So if Bob Ferguson's elected, you're going to go naked to his swearing in. I don't think they're going to let you in.
We'll keep an
Something
eye out.
Tells me they're going to stop you at the door. You could streak it, though. Just run in, streak it, and we'll bail you out. Okay? I feel like that's fair.
Okay.
The bail won't be high.
You don't think so?
No, the bail's not going to be high. I mean, although they might call you right wing, and then they'll put you in a federal prison for 20 years.
This is going to come back to haunt us. We're going to be encouraging streakers.
Okay, I don't encourage the streakers, but if you do streak, I'll bail you out. All right, Linda Starrett Fogarty. This is when I canceled our Sunday-only subscription to the Seattle Times. I've had enough. Yeah, cancel your Times subscription. It's the only way to send them a message. I think a lot of people get the Times still just because it's like, a matter of course, right? Like they've always got it, delivered, or maybe to their house. Yeah, maybe they get it to their door and they, you know, like the Sunday paper, but you're supporting their ridiculousness. So maybe it's time to think about whether you want to continue to support them financially. Mm-hmm. Charlie K, yes, fact checkers on Trump constantly ignore the bigger picture of an issue and nitpick some minuscule detail somehow as if it negates the larger issue. Exactly. Let me see. Weisscastle, Seattle Times tried to prove that it wasn't a big portion of Seattle, as if the size of CHOP was the main issue. Exactly. Thank you for articulating it, because I was having trouble talking about what the problem was. Because I was saying, is quibbling a word?
Quibbling?
Quibbling. Or is it squibbling? No, quibble. Refers to arguing about or disapproving of something that is not important. Yes, quibbling.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, did I make that word up? Or is that a word? It was a word.
That one was.
Great job, Brandy. Janelle Villegas, Trump mentioned Seattle all the time. Our own president at the time wasn't allowed to help us, blocked by our governor, and yet he still remembers us and brings it up. Because it's an example of left-wing violence not only ignored, but propped up by Democrats and supported by the Democratic Party.
And it's true that he offered help and we said no, and then people started dying.
100%. Mm-hmm. Elemental Dino, $4.99 Super Chat. Weird how people want to be so hard-pressed on Trump's hyperbole, but then let Harris go on about how Trump wants a bloodbath. Exactly. We said that post-debate. You know, they're like, immediately, they had these, like, pre-written fact checks for Trump. Like, nope, that's not true. Nope, that's not true. Nope, that's not true. And then Harris brought up the bloodbath line, which has been debunked, and then the very fine people line, which has been debunked a million times. And they didn't, I mean, Trump jumped in and is like, that's not true. But they didn't have these like immediate fact checks ready to go. That's the, we said this on the live debate night special. That's the issue, and I get it. Being a moderator is incredibly difficult. But you have to make a decision about what kind of moderator you're going to be. For instance, in the first presidential debate between Trump and Biden, they decided, because there was so much pre-criticism of CNN, so Jake Tapper and Dana Bash decided, we're just going to be straightforward. We're not going to do real-time fact-checking. Mm-hmm. We're just going to ask the question. And it was fair. They did a pretty good job. But ABC clearly made a decision that it was going to anticipate the potential lies that Trump was going to tell and immediately push back against them. Well, if you're going to do that, you have to be prepared for the lies that Kamala Harris might tell as well, and they clearly weren't. So it has to be an equal fact checking, and it's a very hard thing to accomplish in the moment, because you're not going to have the knowledge to fact check every single lie that might come up. So you're putting yourself in a position to appear biased, which they did. So if you're not up to the task, you can't fact check in real time. Let me see here. Charles Hetrick. There's no laws against nudity in public in Washington. Well, that's the thing.
You know what? There was a video that came out over the weekend with a naked man with boobs walking around
naked
Capitol
man,
Hill.
And pee-pee dangling.
Yep.
And also like boob implants or something.
Yeah.
But that's
nobody
the thing.
Doing anything.
You know what, Charles? That's a really good point. I didn't even think about it. We allow the Solstice Parade, where we have adults fully butt naked, riding around on bikes in front of kids. We allow the Pride Parade in downtown Seattle, where you've got BDSM, people who are naked, doing all measure of things. That's fine. No big deal. But a guy can't streak at the swearing-in ceremony it's not going to be Bob Ferguson, first of all.
First of all.
I should have said that earlier. We won't have to worry about bailing you out for streaking, because it's going to be a swearing-in for Dave Reichert. But if it is for Bob Ferguson, you're telling me that they'll arrest that guy, but all the other nudity is fine? That might be grounds for a lawsuit if that happens.
There you go.
All right, now I'm invested.
As I mentioned before
now
the show,
I'm invested.
I really believe the Apple Cup is a sign of what's to come in November. That's my hope. My hope and prayer.
Oh, the Cougs.
The Cougs winning is a sign of what is to come in November.
I like that.
Yeah.
Red can win.
It gives me hope.
Hey. My husband was very happy. We watched it on a little screen from the pool in Vegas.
Yep.
And he was in there like, and then he was like, turned it off like before the end, and then found out they won later. But
turned it off?
Well, I don't remember if it was like, because we were all, you know, we're
there's
trying to enjoy things
on,
you know? Dave Glenn, we'll end with you. Ferguson is like a kid in a car on a cross-country road trip that farted, and you make me say fart on air. They farted, and now he's holding his nose going, who farted? He's trying to be relevant and still cover it up. Yeah. Thank you for that. Nicole, thanks for putting
You're
that
welcome.
Comment in there. I really appreciate it.
Made me smile.
All right. Nicole, you had a good vacation, though?
It was great.
Great?
Yeah.
Great? Relaxing?
Yes.
Love it.
Pool.
Sunscreen. Sun. Wore your sunscreen?
I wore sunscreen.
Great. All right. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Even the Democrats say the Democrats are lying. Former Washington Governor Gary Locke, Democrat, was on King 5 News following the gubernatorial debate on Tuesday, and he talked about the CCA, the Climate Commitment Act, the initiative that, of course, seeks to repeal it, and the fact that, yeah, his fellow Democrats have lied to people about the CCA and the fact that it raised gas prices.
But Dave Reichert was also very accurate and pointed out the weakness of that legislation because the governor's office and the leaders of Olympia said that passage of this legislation would lead to maybe just pennies increase in the gas tax. And in fact, people were just surprised that it jumped so high, over 25 cents in some cases, and even higher at some points. And so there's a lack of trust sometimes in our government officials when they say, well, trust us, we're going to pass this. It's really not going to hurt you. It's going to help you. And then the opposite occurs. And so it may affect some of the other initiatives that are on the ballot when they say, well, if you pass this initiative, get rid of this tax or that tax, it's going to really decimate state government. And so I think the voters are a little bit concerned that Olympia is not really being truthful, or they're exaggerating the consequences, either for or against the various legislation.
Yeah. Sanity check there from Gary Locke. And voters have every right in the world and every reason in the world to be skeptical of the Climate Commitment Act and the lies that elected leaders have told and covered up for, like Bob Ferguson has. That's your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback, for letting Nicole and I have a really desperately needed few days off, but we're back at it. I don't think we have any days off from now to November. I don't know, maybe something crazy will come off, but we're in it. We're in it to win it. If you've not signed up to support the show already, please do so. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. You can support our show for just $5 a month. We really would appreciate it. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. And don't forget to check out yesterday's episode of Sundays with Subscribers with Spokane chef Chad White. See you tomorrow.